horror movies are more than just empty thrills. They are a mirror that reflects the darker sides of our culture and our psyche. Each episode, we will go beyond the first cut and discuss the themes and topics that hide below the surface.
I'm Dave, Professor of Communication.
And I'm Vince, Professor of Psychology. Welcome to A Dark Impression.
When you think Christmas horror movies, holiday horror movies, let's be inclusive. Die Hard, not a horror movie.
No.
Best Christmas movie. Yes. I guess for the terrorists, it could be a horror movie.
Yes.
Imagine from the from the terrorist perspective. It's one guy.
From Hans Gruber's perspective, he fell down a really long chimney.
It's a lot like Alien. There's a guy that keeps popping up randomly. He works his way through the ducts. He comes up, he kills, and then he disappears again. And he can't really be hurt. He bleeds a little bit.
I had not thought of that metaphor. That's a clever analysis.
That's why they pay me the big bucks. I come up with stuff like that. This is it. I can hang my hat on it.
Well, speaking of big bucks, a huge production. If you're telling me a Christmas horror movie, I'm not going to talk about Black Christmas. I'm going to go back to Gremlins. Gremlins is a great Christmas horror movie.
It is. Yeah, it has something for everybody. Literally everybody. From children through adults who want gore in their movies.
Yes.
A little bit for everybody in that film.
That's what I love about that movie. It's all like pint size.
Joe Dante directed it, right? So we have Joe Dante.
Yes.
We have executive produced by Steven Spielberg.
Again.
Written by Chris Columbus. We got there's those three big heavy hitters from the 80s.
The same Chris Columbus who did Harry Potter.
Harry Potter and Home Alone, yeah.
What?
Yeah, he wrote it.
Also two movies that kind of share stuff together. But yeah, let's move on.
Phoebe Cates is in it.
Yes.
80s teen hottie Phoebe Cates.
Mm-hmm.
And Howie Mandel voices Gizmo, the gremlin.
That I didn't know.
I didn't either until I looked it up on IMDb.
Wow. Huh. Okay.
I wouldn't have guessed that. It didn't sound like Howie Mandel, but, it sounded like a toy.
Well, gremlin. Who knows what Howie Mandel really sounds like.
I've never met him, so.
Yeah, Gizmo's voice could be his real kind of expression mode.
Kind of like Gilbert Gottfried, not his real voice. It's really weird.
You say his name and automatically you have his voice in my head. That's, uncomfortable. Yeah, so for this podcast, I rewatched the movie, which we'll talk about in some other episode, but I rewatched Gremlins recently, and it's a lovely movie. It's just great.
It's bizarre in the best possible way, and I genuinely enjoyed it.
Yeah, there's some things in that movie that are not meant to be horror movie things, but that kind of are when you watch that movie again as an adult, and not like in the 80s. I guess some things culturally have changed, like that scene at the bank, which, wow.
With the old woman trying to take the dog, is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah.
So I'm going to kill your dog, I'm going to put it in the microwave.
Yes.
And the tumble dryer, I'm going to put it in the tumble dryer, and the guy next to her is like, yeah, that would kill it.
Wow, yeah, I know that. Yeah.
Everyone's like, yeah, no, that would kill a dog for sure.
What was wrong with people in the 80s?
I guess they just didn't care about dogs as much, right?
Where was PETA? Yeah, no, so I love that movie for a gazillion reasons. I think there's a lot of interesting themes in it. I think the theme of, do not break the rules. And I know this is kind of a general trope in the horror genre. Do not do this. If you do, something bad's going to happen. But I think it's so well laid out in Gremlins. And you start with something really cute, really innocent, the little Mogwai, Gizmo. And it's because of kind of accidental, but also experimental reasons that all of the bad stuff happens.
Yeah, I do like how they set that up right away. Keep him out of the light, don't get him wet. Don't feed them after midnight. And then they're broken one by one in order of severity. So it's like, keep him out of the light. He sees the light and he's like, they're like, okay, he's upset a little bit. Don't get him wet. They get him wet. And then, six more or whatever spout out of his back, five more. Okay, that's worse. presumably, except for the dad. The dad really wants to market this. And then don't feed him after midnight, and I think we all know what happens there. It goes from a Christmas movie about an old lady with Scrooge-like tendencies and, you know, the bank teller kid. I don't know how he was a bank teller in high school, but he was. Then it goes from that into, like, a straight horror movie.
Yes, but, and here's the thing. It's a horror movie, but there's so much humor in it, as opposed to nowadays, which is, I mean, we're stuck in the age of grit. Like, everything has to be gritty. Everything has to be serious. Everything has to be completely dark. I think that something that's fun with Gremlins is it starts as a Christmas movie. It's snowy. It's fluffy. It's happy. You're in this spirit of the season. And then you get, yeah, that the breaching of the rules. Something that shouldn't happen. And then all of those nasty consequences, but still with some humor.
Yeah, I think that the humor in it definitely helps to offset the, like you said, the nasty consequences, the bad stuff that happens. So, like, as a viewer, you kind of have this emotional whiplash because there are these moments of, like the mom getting attacked, which is still terrifying to me.
Yeah.
And then, like, you just switch back to, like, the dog tied up on the Christmas lights, which is terrifying, but it's also kind of funny.
Yeah, speaking of the mom, when she throws one inside the microwave and it just explodes, right. That's super gory.
There's comedy there, though. And also same with the blender.
Yeah.
Finally, the dad's invention worked.
All of the kitchen appliances become weapons. And then you switch later to the scene in the bar and you have that one that's wearing a trench coat for some reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know where he found a tiny trench coat.
And sunglasses.
Acts as an exhibitionist. Just flashing. What? I don't know. That's one thing that I love about that movie is that kind of the range of emotions and I don't know, topics and reactions that they get out of the audience. It's not just linear and always in the same range. There's a lot of substance for a movie that's fundamentally really silly.
I would definitely agree with that. So one of the things I was thinking about when watching it again was this idea of childhood psychological fears of your toys coming alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, I know I had that concern. Like I would have like my, you know, my fluffy stuffed animals. They were good. They were cool. But then I would have some kind of weird toys that in the daylight they were okay, but at night they had to go away. Or else they were going to come and, like, stab my feet with thumbtacks or something like that while I slept. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Because the Gremlins still has that impact on me because they look like toys. They look like Furbies. Do you remember Furbies? Right.
Yeah. So which came first?
Gremlins did by probably 15 years before the Furbies or so.
Huh. Yeah, so it's interesting because I think... And I'm not a developmental psychologist, so I can think of two colleagues that would probably have more to say on this than I can. But it's kind of interesting to see the progression in terms of the mental representation that we make of objects through development with the presence of imagination. And so some objects will take a life of their own, and it's kind of developmentally appropriate for a child to talk about a doll and infuse life into the doll or the toy and to really consider that object as not just a physical representation but kind of the metaphorical representation of what the object is. I think it's developmentally appropriate. What's interesting is how the horror genre kind of uses that as a common trope. So the gremlin, the toy that attacks, Chucky, the clown toy in Poltergeist, so kind of taking something that should be innocent and positive, a toy, and kind of twisting it and making it into an actual threat. And I think that's, it's interesting as a trope to be used to scare adults because we all have that memory of probably that toy that by daylight it looked fine. And once you turn off the light, the shape of it kind of looks weird. Or as an adult, we look at those objects and we can't figure out why a child would infuse any kind of life into it. We've lost that kind of, I don't know, innocence or that capacity to imagine and to visualize an object being more than what it is. Yeah. I think it's interesting to watch that movie as a child and then as an adult and see how different things kind of come out as spooky.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this before, but I remember seeing this when I was really young.
Yeah.
And it scared the bejesus out of me. Like, the idea of my parents being attacked, particularly my mom, being attacked by, like, some creature was petrifying. I knew it was a movie. I was old enough to realize that it's not real life, but young enough to kind of not... I mean, plus, I think everybody's mom looked very much the same in the 80s. So they all had, like, the same haircut, wore the same clothes.
Yeah.
So it was very easy to place that.
There was a mom section of the Sears catalog that you could order,
exactly,
like, mom's clothes. Yeah.
Or JCPenney, depending on how fancy you were getting. And it was very easy just to, like, picture my mom in that situation as a kid and be like, well, that's it. You know, we're not getting any Mogwais in the house because they're just going to murder everybody.
And because you know that you're going to break the rules. Because if there's anything that we know about rules, is that we like to break them. Not all rules are logical. Not all rules feel instinctual. So one of the characteristics of people that get frontal lobe region trauma or injuries is they lose the capacity to inhibit their behavior. So when we think about, like, moral behavior or doing the right thing, oftentimes doing the right thing is not doing something, but it's stopping yourself from doing the wrong thing. And that's what we acquire through development, is the capacity to kind of regulate our own behavior and inhibit our tendencies to be impulsive and I guess in some version destructive. And I think that's what you see in the Mogwai to a gremlin transformation, is you have that cute little innocent furry fluffy version, but then you have that impulsive destructive version that has absolutely no inhibition, coming back to the one with the trench coat that has absolutely no inhibitions. But I think that's the interesting thing about that, the monster of that movie, is that transformation into the disinhibited dark side of the Mogwai. I thought that was the coolest thing, the transformation, the egg shape, very reminiscent of Aliens. But yeah, the kind of, it should be a transformation from gremlin to Mogwai. If we're talking about people, you tend to transform from a creature child that's more impulsive, that has no self-regulation, to something that is more socially adept and capable of inhibiting their own behavior. And in Gremlins, it's the total opposite.
I live with one of those right now, the gremlin child in the middle of transforming into the fuzzy Mogwai that knows how to behave herself. So I completely get that.
No claws or scaly skin, but...
No. Not yet. We'll see how things go. Yeah, I think one of the things that stuck with me after this, just watching it, was the funny deaths that they had for the people with little to no consequence. So, like, the American-made tractor, the guy kept going on and on about foreign junk. And then, like, yeah, sure enough, the American-made tractor can plow through a house and kill him and his wife. And then they, like, rocket power the wheelchair to shoot the old lady out the window, which was just wonderful.
I'm glad you say that, because, that one, I remember watching it and cracking up laughing at, and same thing, just that scene is perfect.
There's no consequence, though. Like, she dies, and then they're like, yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Not really a big deal.
Yeah, I guess that's, it was a different time. It was a more innocent time. People died and it was okay. It reminds me, like, there's something about 80s movies where people die and it's kind of okay. There was not this kind of gravitas to every single death.
Right. Yeah, less hanging on to it and more of just like, well, you know what? They weren't that important anyways.
It's like the death serves the story instead of the death being the story.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, you see that a lot in the slasher films. The main character is the one that you want to live.
Right.
But everybody else is expendable.
Right.
And they die, and then you're like, okay. Well, on to the next one, then.
Right. They die to kind of raise the tension between the antagonist and the final person.
But that's the allure of it, right? Is to see how the killer... You don't go in to see the killer get stopped by the first person. You go in to see the killer kill everybody except for the last girl.
Right.
And that's the one that gets them.
I'm curious, from your perspective, what would have been interesting technical challenges in making that movie? Because it's kind of unique, the number of small creatures. I don't remember a lot of 80s movies that had so many, I guess, animatronics. So, like, from your perspective, what makes Gremlins such a staple of movies in general, but I guess Christmas horror movies?
Yeah, well, I think it's... First of all, probably the hardest thing of working on the film was working with the dog, because the dog's in a lot of it, and dogs mm-hmm. are notoriously difficult to work with.
None of them have won an Oscar, which I think is just, it's a shame.
Yeah, you know.
Dogs, I want to see a category for the best doggy in a movie at the Oscars.
I would like that, too. I would like that, too. I've really been liking Ayn in the Cowboy Bebop remake. Not a horror film, but, you know, anytime there's a corgi on screen, I'm happy.
Okay.
So, in terms of the animatronics, I think it's really interesting because in an interview, Chris Wallace, he was in charge of the puppets, he mm-hmm. talks about how really the only peer working at that level of puppet work was Jim Henson. And so they based a lot of the animatronics on his work and his puppet rigs and things like that. So they're not copying it, but they're inspired by the Muppets to make the Gremlins.
Okay, but they're so not, a little bit of Cookie
they're not
Monster,
using Jim Henson's studio, so it's all homebrewed. What was that?
I said a little bit of Kermit, a little bit of Cookie Monster. I can see that.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's part of what makes it a good quote-unquote family horror movie,
right,
is that there are these cute fuzzy creatures in it. And I could probably show the first 20 minutes to my 5-year-old,
right,
and she would be like, oh, that thing's so cute, like, I want one, right? And if I showed her the rest, she wouldn't sleep all night, but she could get through that bit. So there's kind of something for kids to grab onto. It also provides a nice segue for the adolescents, teenagers, to mm-hmm. move out of that, like, oh, that's too kiddie of a movie, I don't really like that, like, you know, it's puppets.
Yeah.
But then you see the puppets murder people, and you're like, well, I like that.
Right.
That's subversive. I that's cool. Yeah. And then as the adults, you can kind of look back and think, like, oh, yeah, like, what if my toys did this, my pets did that? You can remember that childhood, and then you can, I guess, make sense of it as a whole, that you wouldn't necessarily get from being a child watching it or being a teen watching it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a movie that would be effective now if I saw it for the first time. I think it's one of those movies that has the its largest impact if it's seen at, like, a specific age, because the gore is not too intense. Like, there's a little bit of, like, few cuts and little mm-hmm. claws, but there's a little bit of blood. There's a lot of goo when they get killed. Like, there's an interesting age range for this movie that doesn't seem to overlap with a lot of other horror movies, which tends to be for older audiences. This one kind of fits. It's kind of a good introduction to the concept of a scary movie. Plus, it has, like, a decent resolution. So... Mm-hmm. You
yeah,
get
there's
that
cliffhanger.
Hmm?
There isn't that cliffhanger.
Right. Well, it's both the cliffhanger and it's the feeling of coming down from the adrenaline rush that mm-hmm. there's a positive ending to it and not an ending that makes you feel like, oh, that was a close one. This one's kind of, yeah, people can go back to their Christmas and, well, bury a few deads, but, yeah. It was the 80s.
It was okay. Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. I didn't even think about that, but I would say that, yeah, like, I think 10 to maybe 13
right.
is, like, that, like, really nice range of you're old enough to know that it's not real, but you're still young enough that there's scary bits to it. Like, I wasn't scared by it. There was moments in it that I'm like, man, like, kind of taken aback. I can't believe they did this in a PG movie. And then, you know, 2 months later, they came out with PG-13. They're like, oh, yeah, Gremlins. We can't do that again. So, yeah, I think that's, like, that kind of sweet spot, like you said, of trying to figure out who you are as a teenager, as a, like, you're developing into a real-life person. and trying to figure out who you are. And I think that that movie fits in nicely because it has a little bit on both sides of that line, that childlike element and then the adult element that your parents are like, you know, don't look at the TV, don't watch this. But it's not so graphic that, yeah, you're going to have nightmares about exploded heads and being hunted by aliens and stuff like that.
Right, I mean, you got to give credits to the writers, the directors, for making a movie that kind of strikes that right age range, because I think we tend to want to sanitize a lot what people view, so we don't want to show, we don't want to evoke fear until a certain age, and then after some age, it's fine. But I don't know how, in like the entertainment in general, we are building up this kind of enjoyment of fear as an emotion that can be enjoyed within a particular context. You look at the original versions of a lot of fairy tales have a lot of gruesome elements, and that's something that's been discussed by much greater experts than we are. But I think this is something to that's worth noting, that there have been a lot of times where showing something scary was kind of appropriate at different ages because of the level of scare or what you show. Nowadays, horror movies are either really gruesome or not a lot, I guess. And there's not a lot of movies that fit that gremlin category of cute and yet scary.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting market, and I think it says something about the way that our culture is, the relationship in our culture with the concept of fear and of the resolution of fear and exposing yourself to something that is fearful to build resilience, to learn how to cope and process something that's fearful. I don't know if we're doing something great at kind of limiting the exposure only. I don't know.
The only other film I can think of that would fall into this category is Coraline. And I genuinely can't think of any other films that would kind of hit on both the childlike aspects and the horror in the same breath, almost.
I think the 80s had more movies, not necessarily with horror itself, but with complex emotions infused definitely. In a movie. I'm thinking of Neverending Story, where there was some really scary moments and some very sad moments, and they were not diluted. They were written well in a way that's understandable at different stages of development, but it was impactful without being overwhelming. And I think that's, like, if we want to take a step back, and I mean, as much as I love the goof part of Gremlins, and I do, especially the second one. Second Gremlins, not a Christmas movie, which is why we're doing this episode, but hilarious. But there's deeper emotions than just, you know, some kind of saccharine version of happiness or fear or whatnot. There's something kind of interestingly real about it.
I never considered it from that lens, and I definitely appreciate that. I think that you're onto something, and I think that, you know, as you're talking, I was thinking about shows my daughter watches, and I'm like, what I watched at that, like, I was watching, like, you know, like the late 80s, early 90s cartoons where people were shooting at each other a lot. Things like Neverending Story, I think I probably saw it when I was 5 or 6 years old or so.
Right.
What she's watching now is like the Netflix kid show. She watched a lot of those. Right. And there's no conflict in them. Or there's very little conflict. There's like one show that she watches, Bluey, about a dog. Right. And there's emotions and conflict in there. But like for a vast majority of the shows, they're just, everybody's happy, nobody disagrees.
Right. And there's no fear.
And there's no fear. No fear.
It's like, it's like of other emotions, sadness, conflicts, yeah, you might see that in kids' show. But a depiction of a fearful situation and showing that fear has an onset, has a peak, and it has an offset, I think is something that is developmentally interesting. Because it's not like, so I'm going to put on my neuroscience hat, it's not like, with regards to emotions, we're born with an innate capacity to regulate our emotions. We have a great capacity to trigger emotions, to embrace emotions, And as we age, as we mature, we learn to regulate that emotion. But you have to do that. You have to have situations that will evoke that emotion to learn how to properly regulate that emotion.
Especially in a safe place, at home on your couch.
Exactly. Something that you can pause or you can stop and go, I'm overwhelmed. So there's a pedagogical aspect to horror movies that are aimed not specifically for adults, but also for children and preteens. There's something there that has some kind of value in, because fear is an emotion that we will all get exposed to at some point. So the capacity to learn to recognize your own reaction to fear, are you the flight type of person? Are you the fight type of person? Are you the freeze kind of person? How do you react when you get that rush of heart rates, sweating? Recognizing those cues allows you to learn how to regulate them. Not providing any exposure to those cues, I don't know what impact that has. So kids, go watch horror movies, but from the safety of your home with your parents. And, well, not all horror movies, but Gremlins is a good one.
And The Thing.
Eh, really?
It's a good one for kids, yeah. Kids love The Thing. There's dogs in it. Kids like dogs.
For people who haven't seen The Thing, watch it on your own first before you show that to your children. Yeah, you're welcome.
Two things I want to talk about before the end, real quick, is, first of all, Phoebe Cates' dad and the story about her dad dressing up as Santa and falling down the chimney and breaking his neck.
Yes.
Which surprised me. I did not remember that. And it seemed like it was, I don't know, but it was pretty impactful. And at the end, the mom and the family, they're all kind of happy. They're all, like, the wrap-up, they killed the bad gremlins, they're hanging out with Gizmo, and the mom says, I bet he likes chicken soup. And I'm like, woman, did you not see what happened last time he had water?
Yes.
Did you not see this? Do not give him chicken soup.
Oh, I want to bring something up, and this is going to be my last point. Where do all the evil gremlins die?
In the movie theater.
I know. This is such a meta movie.
Yeah.
Movies kill gremlins. So, the source and solution to all problems is probably in the movies.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, now you know, if your town gets attacked by gremlins,
just go to your local theater. Yes. Yeah. I'm glad we did a Christmas episode.
There's few and far between Christmas horror movies, but, you know, I tend to enjoy them, and they're usually pretty campy, and I think Gremlins is really at the top of the pack for me.
So what else would you recommend to people who want to watch good Christmas horror movies?
Yeah, we were talking about the wonderful Jack Frost, yes, which is among the best of the best of 90s camp. It's a really, really bad movie, but in the best possible ways. Krampus from a few years ago. I don't know about the remakes. It looks like there was like a dozen remakes of it, or a dozen additions on the Krampus line. And one of my personal favorites with Bill Goldberg, Santa's Sleigh, Slay, not Sleigh. Mm-hmm. Not a typo either. He's off killing people. What would you add to that list, other than the wonderful Santa's Sleigh, of course?
I was honestly just going to say Krampus, because it has been kind of a popular character before getting its own movies, and I love the fact that you never actually really see Krampus. Mm. You see parts of it. I think it's fun to have a movie where, yeah, visually, I thought it was an interesting movie. The whole story as well was interesting. I wouldn't say it was one of the best movies of all time, but it was thoroughly entertaining. So I think, yeah, that would be that and Gremlins, my two Christmas horror movies.
You mentioned Black Christmas before, too.
Yes, Black Christmas as well would go on the list. So, yeah.
Well, we hope everyone has a good holiday,
whatever you celebrate.
A spooky holiday season.
All right.
Well, happy holidays, everyone. Thanks for taking the time to listen to A Dark Impression. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Rating and reviews make the world a scarier place. Consider leaving one wherever you get your podcasts. A Dark Impression was produced and edited by Vince and Dave. All movies are copyright their respective sources. Music is from Adobe Stock, all rights reserved.